From the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, hello and welcome to the weekly podcast for the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I'm so happy that you took the time to download us and that you're listening to us. What we do every week is we bring you leaders in the world of sports medicine, exercise science, and the applications of those fields. And we try to bring you people who are passionate about what they're doing and have a message. And today is no exception. We are pleased to bring to you today Mr. Matt Bellis, who is the Health and Physical Education Specialist in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School System. Welcome to the podcast today, Matt.
Hey, how are you? Thank you.
I'm doing great today. Let me tell the audience a little bit about you and why we've got you here on the podcast. Matt, as I said, is in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School System, and you may say, well, what's, you know, big deal about that? Well, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg School System, and this is in Charlotte, North Carolina, has almost 142,000 students spread across 159 schools. It's a huge, actually, school system. Actually, it's the 17th largest in the country. And you think, well, 17th, that's not a big deal. Actually, it is a big deal because there's literally thousands of school districts in the country. And being the 17th largest is an interesting situation because it's a big school system and a lot of kids. Matt's education, he has a master's degree in health promotion. He is a content expert in physical education in schools. I've known Matt for quite a while. I've always been impressed with the passion and the energy that he brings to his position. And so we're really glad to have you on the podcast today, Matt, to talk about physical education in schools and activity for kids.
Excellent. I'm excited.
I'm glad to hear that. You know, nowadays we hear all the issues about kids' health. I think the numbers are about only 42% are active for at least 30 minutes a day. Obesity, about 70% of kids in the United States are obese. 33% are considered overweight. Can the schools do anything about that?
Yes. I think several researchers have shown how everything that we do is, as many researchers have commented, it's inextricably intertwined, and schools, I think the CDC actually has tapped us several times to say schools are the place to be doing preventative measures, you know, categorically for disease measures.
And that's what I was going to ask you. Is it really the school's place? And it sounds like you just said yes, absolutely.
Well, I think it is, as long as we understand our entire focus should be the academic environment and academic outcomes.
Okay.
Many of the pressures that I put on our teachers revolve around trying to meet the needs based on kind of the hand that's been dealt to them.
Right.
I think with the time that we're given in physical education, I don't think it's enough to say that we're going to have any significant impact on obesity. So the measures that we take actually drive more directly into the academic environment. So how can physical activity measures scaffold those outcomes that we want in reading, math, science, social studies, language arts, those other areas, until we get to that point where we can have enough of an effort, enough time to actually have an outcome like preventing obesity.
Now, you just said a bunch of stuff there that we're going to unpack here. And one of the first things you just mentioned there is really teachers focus nowadays, because of all the testing at the end of the grades and so forth, really is based on what we would call academic performance, reading, writing, math skills, et cetera,
exactly.
Et cetera, right?
Exactly.
And nowhere on a test does it have anything to do with the student's physical capabilities, is it?
No, not currently. Our district actually within the past year is committed to what they're determining is a viable, sustainable curriculum, which encompasses essentially an assessment for every content area, which I'm most excited about. With a pilot test that we should get out, hopefully by the end of March, we should start to find out more about what our students actually know about health and physical education and drawing into the specific skills that they should be developing. We kind of will complement that then with that layer of data with other epidemiological models that we work with the health department to really draw specific conclusions about very proximal initiatives that we should have in the school and in the community.
So what you're saying here is, for one, you're going to get to start testing the physical education or physical activity component of all this. and then start to look at how it actually integrates with everything else. And you kind of indicated that earlier, is that since physical activity is really not tested for right now, you have to look at ways and how it supports the other aspects of the academic mission, right?
Exactly. We've had the in-school prevention of obesity and disease initiative since 2009, which has given us substantial curriculum and fitness testing support. Now, what's interesting about that is even though we have a huge amount of fitness testing data that encompasses those six tests, it still doesn't draw into the specific nature of what physical education is and what the outcomes can be because of the time factor.
Okay.
You know as well as I do, there's a very specific treatment to everything that we do in health and physical education, and without enough time, you can imagine your traditional elementary school has physical education one day a week, and if your one day that week falls on a Monday or Friday, there's a very good chance that you miss it. So if you miss a few of those, you don't get the treatment. You don't get the treatment, you can't have the impact.
Before you go further, so elementary schools in North Carolina, they only get 30 minutes of activity a week?
Well, we got to get the definition right.
Okay.
With physical education, the mandate is for 45 minutes once a week for a minimum of 34 weeks per year. That's the new mandate within our district.
So 45 minutes a week for 34 weeks a year. Okay.
Right. So that's physical education. Now, physical activity is mandated by the state level, and our district level policies support it of having 150 minutes of physical activity time per week. Okay. In the K-8 arena.
So that would like include recess and things like that?
Correct. Now, what happens in each of these different environments is something completely independent. So what happens in physical education is, like the ACSM report goes into neuromuscular skill development, neuromotor control, those kind of things. That's what happens in physical education, trying to develop the physical fitness of our students. Whereas what happens in recess is more of the social hierarchical components of movement, where the students are actually just going out there for enjoyment and getting that kind of brain break so that when they come back in, they're more engaged.
Okay, so we have recess and we have physical education. And as far as just free activity, they are getting the 150 minutes a week?
For the most part.
Okay, yeah, because I've talked to some people and some states don't even require that.
Correct.
I can't imagine being in a classroom full of second graders that haven't had recess, but that's me.
Right.
So you mentioned a while ago, so you need time, certainly, and that's something that you guys are working for.
Right.
How does activity, and we'll just group activity and physical education together at this point, how does exposure to activity help children learn, or does it?
Well, Daniel Wolpert is an engineering researcher that actually had a TED conference not too long ago, and his whole presentation was this very long, kind of drawn-out scientific thing. It actually started with a simple comment that said, your brain is created for one reason, and that reason is movement.
Hmm.
So if you know anything about the brain, with researchers like Gene Blades or John Medina or John Rady or Eric Jensen, who actually just came out with some stuff on poverty, the way our educational environment should be shaped around movement and using movement as a platform to engage students is significant. So when you start working backwards from where we are now, we do a very good job as a culture of programmatically removing physical activity and physical education at a very early age.
Even though we have been built to move.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'll second what you said about John Medina, who wrote the book Brain Rules, and that was one of the first things he said. He said, if you look at how, and he's a neuroscientist, he says, if you look at how our brains developed, it's for movement. That's our first priority, and yet our society takes it out.
Categorically, there are barriers really at every turn, from the first instance of even preschool. There's some researchers that take it all the way back actually to car seat safety. There's actually a report kind of layering on top of that about 2 months ago that reported that our playgrounds are actually too safe. So our kids are actually being bored out there trying to enjoy movement, and they can't do it.
Yeah, playgrounds are too safe.
Too safe. Like they actually looked at the angle, how the angle of a slide had decreased so much to where kids aren't even using them anymore. They're not sliding anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'll say, I look at some of the modern playground equipment, and I think there's no way I'd be interested in doing that.
Right.
Where's the carousel, the thing that you used to get on and push as far as hard as you could until you flew off?
Yeah. not out there. Shards of glass aren't out there either, thankfully, though. So.
So it's obvious that we were built, or what the scientists tell us is that we were built for movement. Our society's taking it out. What are some of the outcomes of that? Do you think learning is decreased because we're not moving? I guess come back to the regular question. What are the benefits of having kids that have regular activity? How does it benefit them in the classroom?
Well, several different ways. We have one measure that we look at from the CDC, who actually came out with a report last year. It says physical activity, physical education in schools, increases the learning environment and engagement of students. So it actually drew several studies from across the spectrum of K-12 education, and it said, look, the impact on physical activity, it could be really significant, but part of the problem is the fact that no one's getting enough time to really see what the measures are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, we know for a fact that to this point that we can say with confidence that you could spend the maximum amount of time that they'll let you in physical education and physical activity during the school day, and it will have no impact at all on EOG outcomes from a negative standpoint. So it won't make your scores go down. If anything, it'll make your scores go up. Now, district data that we have over the past year showed significant correlations to students that participated in what we call a fitness lab.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we've done at two schools over the past year is we've taken a classroom space, a traditional classroom space at an elementary school and at a high school. We've taken all the desks and chairs out of it and put in kind of innovative, somewhat technology-based movement equipment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Put extra physical educators in that arena, and then just kind of watch the data over a year to see what the impact has been on attendance and behavior and end-of-grade testing and standardized test scores.
Right.
Now, what's significant to this point is the fact that we've had remarkable gains in all of those measures across every grade level.
Mm. Wow.
The problem is we haven't been able to run the regression yet, so we don't really know if there's potential outliers with attendance or some other kind of potential problem. So we know, even within our district, that when we add more physical education, health education, it has a big impact on what these traditional academic indicators are.
Yeah, so just attendance, behavior issues, and learning.
Right.
Wow. So your take-home message, if you want your child to have better behavior in school and to learn more, they need to be active.
As much as possible.
It's interesting you say that, because I just noticed that there was a new study that came out in Medicine and Science and Sports and Exercise this month. And for those of you listening, that's kind of one of our primary journals in the field by Galata et al. And they said that having physical education the school day increases mental processing speed by 13% and increases concentration performance by 14% of the kids that have physical education. And they were talking about general activity in that case. So it sounds like the data is there to support the inclusion of activity in physical education as a way to increase scores, academic scores.
Yeah, we're to the point in our district where when I have meetings with either principals or district leaders, it ends up being about something completely unrelated to what we need to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
Time and time again, we see principals and zone superintendents or even regional representatives that come in that hear our speech about finding space and finding time and what the data says and how we can have an impact not only on specific academic outcomes that they want, whether it's reading or math or science, but also specific community-based initiatives like getting parents more engaged or getting students more engaged or behavior outcomes. It really doesn't matter what it is. Physical activity and physical education is a viable treatment for some of those options. So,
and it's cheap.
Yeah. But what's nice about having this data and having this movement is the fact that I can have that conversation and then challenge the principal or the superintendent or the leader to say, you have to find the resources now. We have to find a way to make this work. What's kind of confusing about my position right now is that I spend a large amount of time trying to understand how to make a schedule work for a middle school or how to bend allotments for a school to make sure that we can get adequate time in physical education. It's kind of interesting because my background is in skill development, fitness, and exercise science, and now I'm to that point where a lot of those questions are already answered. So now I've got to work on adapting my skill sets to make sure that I can actually have these conversations with district leaders and come up with viable solutions based on what their resources are.
Well, it's interesting that there is a growing body of literature that suggests that activity is good for kids. Having non-activity is not good for kids, but having activity is great for kids. And there still seems to be a reluctance to accept that and to implement it. I think if there was probably any other intervention, there would be a stampede towards the door to try to implement that, and they'd throw tons of money at it. Why is it? What is it about physical education and activity that makes people seem to dismiss the findings?
Well, I think you're talking about a construct that has its own gravity and its own environment, because you can draw any piece out of that environment and it could substantiate not doing more physical education. For instance, you have what I call the finger pointing construct, where you talk to a physical educator and they can't move things forward because of the principal. You talk to the principal and they can't move things forward because of the teacher. Well, you talk to the teacher and they can't move things forward because of the student. So I constantly go back to what we're doing as school leaders, as teachers and principals, to make decisions for our students. Because even if your students, I don't care where you're from or what socioeconomic status you're from, students are students are students, and teachers teach. So when students show up in my class, I have to be prepared to engage them and move them forward at every initiative, and then use the rest of the school resources appropriately. So that's one part. You have the finger pointing idea. The other part is kind of the layers between reading and math and science and assessment. So, for instance, this last year we had a Common Core initiative, which I've actually done more training in my district this year to understand how the Common Core fits with our new Healthful Living Essential Standards than I've done just for Healthful Living New Essential Standards. So the amount of resources that's poured into literacy and math and science just really levels the playing field for anybody else to even try to compete. It's pretty significant.
So you're saying many times we get in our own way and when we try to implement these things. And the second part, we tend to forget that that activity and having and being healthy actually can lead to better cognition and better educational outcomes.
Absolutely. I think some of the foundation that we've been able to stand on this year is, even with other subject areas like the Common Core Language Arts Initiative, which is, these 46, 48 states have bought into this initiative, it still substantiates, things that we do in health and physical education to try to get more time. So it's not like they're trying to take away from what we're doing, but we're trying to find ways to plug in and say, hey, we're already doing this. There's discipline-specific literacy that students have to learn in physical education, so that potentially substantiates more physical education.
Yeah, so it's not an either-or.
Correct.
We need to add this to make the other better.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Matt, thank you for your time. We're kind of running short here on our time today, and do you have a take-home message for everyone that's listening?
Well, I think if we can just stay focused on, what learning is, if we can have any measure for how we're quantifying that mass, okay, we want our students to learn. What is that? Does that involve the brain? Well, if it involves the brain, then it definitely involves movement. And then our environment that we create for our students, should reflect that if we really want, like we said, viable, sustainable curriculum.
Well, thank you, Matt. That's a great take-home message, and we'll certainly be talking to you again in the future. I want to find out how this Fit Lab experiment goes and how it's incorporated in other places.
Yeah, I've got 18 schools right now scratched to potentially develop one over the next 2 years, so it's going to be work in progress for sure.
So 18 down, 151 to go, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, at least you're going to have a job for a while, right, Matt?
I would think so.
Yeah. So I want to thank you, Matt, again, and I want to thank all of you that have been listening for downloading us and listening to our podcast today. If you've been waiting for the podcast question, I've just been given that question, and the question is, the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system, where does it rank as far as the large school districts in the country? Be the first one to send us the answer to that via email at huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu, and you'll win one of those nifty podcast t-shirts. Thank you again, Matt, for taking the time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And again, thank you all for being with us, and I hope that you join us next week for another individual in the world of sports medicine and exercise science. And until then, we hope that you have an active and healthy week.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Kelsey Sachs and Cheryl Marek and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, providing voiceovers internationally. Music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffbindspodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffbinds Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.